spoiler in time. We don't mess around talking about the things we're using to watch shows on Spoiler in Time. That's Cord Killers. Go watch Cord Killers for the boxes and the tech and getting it all done. And then once you've sat down and you've relaxed and you're watching the show and you want to talk about it, you come here to talk about Justified Episode 7 of Season 5, Lego Batman, and The Expanse Episodes 4 and 5 of Season 2. I'm Tom Merritt. Am I right, Brian Brushwood?
You're 100% right, but what you weren't right about was your choices in the winter movie draft! You lose! You lose!
Did you have to? Did you have to?
It's only beginning, Tom. The victory lap.
It's already done.
No. I got a new goal. Because you realize.
You know, if this was the NFL, you'd get a penalty for unsportsmanlike conduct.
That's right. For excessive celebration. But get ready for the dance move I do when I become the first person to ever pass $1 billion in the winter movie draft.
Okay. So let's get down to it, because honestly, that's really the only conversation left to have. You're $52 million in front of Team DTNS, and it ain't gonna change. But it's $763 million. You need essentially a $240 million run from Logan, or maybe a little bit trickling in from John Wick and 50 Shades, but $200 million plus for sure from Logan. And our good friend Justin Robert Young is skeptical that it can even come close to that.
Yeah, no, he's
thinks 4 weeks, mind you, in 4 weeks.
Correct. In the first month, in fact, we have a side state bet action. I believe the number we landed on was
for actual sides.
Yes, for actual sides for the steak that I'm already going to win.
Broccoli and baked potatoes.
That's correct. I think the number we landed on was 169. I thought that was a slam dunk that it's going to do better than 169 million. He is still, even in the face of, you know, 95% positive Rotten Tomatoes reviews, he still thinks it doesn't have the juice. He keeps shouting, you know, there's no buzz about it. I think he's a crazy person.
See, here's the problem when your wife works for Rotten Tomatoes and Fandango and you get to see Logan early. I'm totally buzz blind now, right? Like, I feel like people are talking about it a lot. And I've even seen people other than myself and Eileen talking about it. But is that just my perceptions getting fuzzed because of that, you know, you learn a new word and you see it everywhere sort of situation? I can't tell.
Right. So you know how good the movie is, though.
That's really good.
That's what I'm hearing. And I think that it's got a very human story that's going to resonate really well. And I've said that a whole bunch of times.
Oh, before we move off the movie draft, though, let's do our job here, which is to cite the movies that came out this week. Collide for Team DTNS did make $1.5 million.
I mean, you never know, Tom. Yeah. Collide Fever.
I know.
It might be a slow buildup.
If it was not mentioning that caused it never to make another dollar, I couldn't forgive myself. So, yeah, Collide. And then, of course, Logan coming out on March 3rd. All right. Let's move on to The Expanse, because you've caught up. You've not only caught up, you've gotten all the way to the end. We did get an email from Mike Kepper, who says, did you notice in The Expanse that Liberty Island has a wall around it? If there was no wall, water would be at Lady Liberty's feet. They said that the ice caps had all melted, so sea level has risen dramatically, and I bet Florida is underwater. It sounds like in The Expanse universe that there are way too many people on Earth. I heard them mention a number, but I don't recall the figure, maybe 80 billion, but there are problems associated with water and food. In The Expanse, sea level must have risen about 150 feet, and he does some math about that. And by the way, he took the Brian Brushwood challenge and binge-watched the first season of The Expanse without reading the books and avoiding spoilers and loved it.
Dude, that's great. That is awesome. I gotta tell you, getting caught up, watching those two back-to-back episodes, best decision. I can't imagine. I can't speak to anyone else's experience, but I know for me, watching them just back-to-back was just great. And my only criticism, and this is a soft criticism, has been that in comparison to Battlestar Galactica, The Expanse, while an intriguing chess game of a world, has not been as human as Battlestar Galactica was. That's all over. I can't say that anymore because I don't know of any Battlestar Galactica that reduced me to blubbering tears the way episode five of season two of The Expanse did.
And we texted back and forth about this a little this weekend as you were catching up, but I was worried about this scene because it's pretty much the end of Leviathan Wakes, the book. There's a little bit more left to happen, but that's the peak scene that you saw. And when I watched it on TV, I couldn't tell if it would come off as powerful as it did in the book, which it still came off powerful to me on the screen, or if people would look at it and say, well, that's weird. The protomolecule has a face. I don't like that. And so I was overjoyed when you wrote to me and said, no, it did not come off as weird or odd at all.
There was a reverence. I mean, Julie Mao has been his, you know, white rabbit that he's been chasing, haunted, literally haunted by her. Miller as a character has been the standout of the entire series for me. His terrier-like commitment to doing his job has really resonated. And there is on the one hand, okay, it's really weird. It's just a chick in a bodysuit with blue crystals all over her, right? But on the other, yes, the whole thing is a crazy fever dream acid trip. But the human nature of the way he so tenderly approached her and soft shaped, you know, there is only one, you can't, you, there's too much power. He couldn't meet force with force. He had to try nuance and appeal. And that moment of realizing, oh my God, this is the first time they're meeting and what a strange thing it is. And then that moment of where they kiss and then he lays his head on her chest speaks so much about the tender father-like feeling he has for her. You know what I mean? Like,
It is a truly complex relationship. And I think that comes through on the television show, which is, this isn't just, he wants to bone Julie Mao.
Right.
This is not even just I've got a avuncular interest in her. Like, this is a powerful connection that borrows from all different kinds of love and also is absolutely necessary because she's not actually Julie Mao. She's the proto-molecule's echo of Julie Mao. And so only the most powerful connection could kind of navigate that mess and appeal to her.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, they pulled it off because, you know, you get used to on television, we've already seen him make the noble sacrifice once. And then there was a shrug as like, don't worry, take these cancer goes away pills and you'll be fine. And so it's like, we've already seen them make the noble sacrifice and then suffer no consequences from it whatsoever. Right. But to feel the finality of this noble sacrifice and to see him at peace with, you know, his issues resolved to the best of their ability. And, you know, he was always damaged goods and, you know, died as he lived, but it was just profound. It was really profound. And it's like, I'm having a hard time even talking about it because I want to get a bit emotional. It was great. It was just great.
Well, and I know we're talking pretty much about episode five and the end of episode five, but everything in four is pointing us to episode five, at least the things that are happening with Holden and Miller. You know, Miller decides to sacrifice himself again by being the guy to stay behind and keep his finger on the button of the nuclear bomb so it doesn't go off. And of course, the Rossi and Naomi are going to figure out how to rescue him. And they lead you into thinking along those lines of, is it going to be a by the seat of my pants rescue? And Miller and Holden will once again be reunited and they'll put aside their differences because of this near-death experience. And you'd be happy with that. You'd accept that. You'd be like, okay, yeah, that's what I've come to expect. As long as you tell it well and make me believe, then I will be okay with Miller getting rescued. And then they pull this crap on you. And they send Miller into the belly of the beast. And then something way more powerful than his relationship to the crew of the Rossi intervenes. And all bets are off. Because it's also the only way to save humanity.
Yeah. And what a weird moment where it's just like, hey, doesn't have to be Earth. Venus is just as good a planet to smash into as anything.
Yeah. I apologize to Martians and Belters when I said save humanity. It would just Earth humanity.
Yeah. Yeah. Good call. All the way in, there was so many. And you know what? For a character that from what you've told me isn't even in Leviathan Wakes, Christian, that scene with her sitting on the roof where her and her husband would have, and there's this this awkward Skype call that pretty much is like, well, I'm gonna die, all of humanity is blown up, bye. Surprisingly human, surprisingly poignant, powerful stuff all the way around.
And of course, you know, we're skimming lightly over the machinations of power that are going on with the undersecretary trying to hide his relationship to Julie Mao's father, and Christian knowing what's going on and trying to maneuver around that, and the back channel into Anderson's, or I keep wanting to call him Anderson. What's the butcher of Anderson Station is his nickname.
Fred Johnson. Cuddy.
Cuddy. I know. I just want to call him Cuddy. Fred Johnson.
Which, by the way, hold on. Real time out. It's not for me to criticize authors with names, but like Fred Johnson is the most generic name for an Osama bin Laden character that I can imagine. And what's that?
Love that because he's an earther, right? And earthers are boring. And so it just gets across to me like, here's the boring old Fred Johnson of Earth Military, and somehow he turned into the leader of the Belters, and it explains so much about the Belters' sort of love-hate relationship with him.
Well, and there's this moment when somebody, like, as if it's something that should invoke terror in you, I think it was Christian, calls someone like, you're Fred Johnson's puppet. And I'm like, if there's one thing less scary than the name Fred Johnson, it's Fred Johnson's puppets. That's something I'm not going to be scared of.
I know. You're absolutely right. But I kind of love the way that works because, you know, if he was Damien McEvil Knight,
Damien McEvil,
it would be way over the top. So I kind of love going all the way the other way with it.
Damien McEvil is a great name. Of course, you know, a good montage, you know, always makes things. At the end of episode 4, I think, is the one where you see the montage of everyone blowing off steam in different ways. What's his name obsessing about how he lost that pod. You see the other Mohawk chick dancing, losing herself in that moment. And then at the end of episode 5, you have a different montage, and they got me good, man. When because they talked about give me a glass of Ganymede gin, and then there they all are in remembrance of him.
Yeah,
like
and you see the nod to the empty chair, and just
it was so good. Really well done.
By the way, episode 5, not the season finale.
Yeah, how about that?
That's... So, where do you think they're going next, Brian?
I mean, okay. Well, what's unresolved? The Eros is finally done. I guess the question is, follow the proto molecules. There's got to be some conflicts with Fred Johnson. Oh wait. You know what they need to resolve is they flung that ship at Eros and then it just missed. I'd imagine that there's some very peeved Mormons out there, wishing that their ship hadn't just been thrown away for nothing.
Yeah, so what's Fred Johnson going to do with whatever the ship's name was? And I can't remember now.
Oh, I don't know. Space piracy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with that. And who's going to get it? What's Mal going to do? And is Avasarala going to be able to unmask the conspiracy? Is there any fallout?
What I'm looking forward to is that realization. I'm looking forward to getting infected with whatever the information virus is that causes some people to act like stopping the proto-molecule would be the dumbest thing ever. Like that is a great plot point that is being withheld from us. And I assume at some point we're going to get that, and that'll be fun to view everything through a different lens.
And don't forget, we have all those Martian Marines out there looking for something to do. So, it really did feel like a season ender, I guess partly because it's from that part of the book. Anything else before we move on?
No, let's talk about, Tom, can I confess to you that the beginning, the first act of Lego Batman might be one of my favorite comedy things that's ever happened, full stop.
Like, no kidding. Really?
It has this wonderful detached irony that understands the nature of storytelling so well. Everything is self-referential, and it's postmodern in all of my favorite ways. There's this moment where the pilot flying the plane says, "Hey, this is your captain from MacGuffin Airlines," literally called MacGuffin Airlines. "We're traveling with 10,000 pounds of TNT, bunch of bombs, bunch of this, nuclear whatever, and we're flying right over the most crime-ridden capital of the world. I'm sure everything will be just fine." You know, like, and everything is so on the nose. I was blown away by the first act. And then this distracting back of the head thing, I thought, wow, with all this detached irony, how are they going to make me actually care? Because I assume at some point, you know, you gotta set this down. You got to make me care, go along for the ride. And it turns out they don't. Instead, the entire motivation for the movie is now the words are changed, of course. But it is the story of a emotionally isolated Batman and his life partner, the Joker, who wants him to commit to having a one-on-one hating relationship and just say the words, "I hate you." But Batman is emotionally distant and likes to fight around, and he's unwilling to commit to the Joker. So the joke. So this is the reason for the movie. So the Joker conceives of a large plot to, you know, to hurt Batman's feelings. And all of Gotham is eventually ripped, torn asunder. It's split in half. And the only way to fuse Gotham is for him to reach out and look the Joker in the eye and hold his hand as he finally says, "I hate you." And again, all of this could work, but the problem is, it just didn't land. It didn't land. I think it's funnier on paper than it ended up being in the movie. There was
So the first, you were saying the first act is some of the funniest, but it just didn't carry on the momentum for you, huh?
Yeah. Well, you could tell, like, at some point they were doing it unironically, and you're like, oh, I'm supposed to really feel something about Batman and this anarchist murderer being in a one-on-one hate relationship. And I'm like, I'm not feeling, no, I'm not, this is some, it becomes a literal therapy session at some point. And, it just missed the mark. That's all I'm saying. That's my review of the movie.
There was a piece missing,
so to speak. Okay.
It didn't all fit together. Okay. Is that
all right? All right. Just,
Did it hurt your foot when you stepped on it? Wait,
I can't tell
sense.
If I want to join you in this descent into madness or not. I'm very tempted.
Just say you hate me. Just say it. Just say it.
Yeah. Lots of really good jokes, though.
Your review was really good because you brought me along on your journey where I'm like, oh, it sounds really good. Oh, that sounds really hilarious. Oh, did they blow it?
Yeah, they kind of blew it. But again, like, the parts that were good enough that I'd highly recommend going and seeing it. But just know about, 80% of the way in, it's going to get very tedious, and you're actually going to be made to feel like, well, I sure hope Batman resolves his emotional distance from the Joker, because that's what this movie's about, apparently.
All right. I think your opinion is reasonable. I think you'd come up with reasons for it.
Wait, you're talking around it. You're talking around it. Are you saying it's justified?
It's time to talk about episode 7, season 5 of Justified.
All right.
Which is what Brian's opinion is also. And I call this episode cartoon Mr. Robot meets Orange is the New Black in Breaking Bad.
Yeah. You know, I think we're done. I think you nailed it. Sometimes you speak truth to power, and you just did, sir.
I mean, I wonder, in a pre-Mr. Robot world, if episode 7 of season 5 plays better for me.
Can we just say it? Like, I think that's why I went on to the next episode, because I'm like, it was not good. This is not good. When did Ava Crowder become the main character of this show?
Last episode, I guess. Yeah.
It's not good. This is a not good episode.
The Breaking Bad part, which is Boyd and Johnny in Mexico, was fine. It was within what I expect from Justified, and yet showing me something new, right? Them south of the border, and it was the double cross where Boyd knew all along, and then the Crows intentionally screw stuff up at the end. Okay, so far so good. It's not the best Justified that they've done, but it's pretty good.
Well, here's
now. Orange is the New Black. Could have been better. It just, I think you nailed it, which is like, when did Ava become such an important character? Suddenly we're focusing so much on Ava and building relationship with these characters. And I'm like, where are we going with this? Is she just going to be in here? Is we just going to be following Ava for a long time? Like, I get that we had to go through all that to position Ava so that she could get the trust to be able to bring in the drugs. And I assume that she's going to pull her connections with Boyd to do that. And maybe there's some plan with Boyd, and that's why he didn't come to see her, because wanted to build sympathy or something. But I really feel like a lot more time was spent on it than, at least at this point, I think it was worth.
Yeah. And I guess that's the real bummer right now, is it wasn't that this was a poorly paced episode or whatever. It's like, we've seen characters that were silly come and go. So I'm not worried about Hacker Man being silly. But I do feel like we're just intractably mired in these overall plot themes. I don't care about Ava's trials and tribulations in prison. I don't care about this kid Crow who seems kind of like an ass.
Oh, Kendall, yeah.
I don't like him. I don't want to see a redemptive arc.
I don't feel they spend too much time on it, and I assume they're simmering a pot in the background that we're going to be eaten out of later. So that I'm okay with that.
Yeah, and meanwhile, it's like Raylan, look, there's a lot of things you can do with Raylan that I will forgive. You can make him meaner than I'd like or whatever. You could make him make dubious decisions. You could make him and Art be fighting over corruption, and you could intimate that he's a less than upstanding character. What you can't do in my book is let him be boring. And then Raylan is boring as crap. He's the boringest character on the show. Anti-Raylan, even and Boyd, you could do a lot of things with Boyd, but making him he's alternately powerless and incompetent, and then whoopsie doodle, he had the upper hand the whole time. And it's like, I don't know. I feel like I'm having difficulties right now. I'm really looking forward to getting past all
of this. I hear you. No, I'm having some of the same difficulties myself. And Raylan being boring, I want to think, and maybe I'm just, being a little Pollyanna, I want to think that Raylan wouldn't come off as boring if he were not trying to hunt down a guy who I don't think should be as good at technology as they're pretending that he is.
Fair enough. So you're saying a hero is only as good as his villain. If he just committed to one villain and said, I hate you too.
I'm so spoiled by Mr. Robot, because he's not the worst tech villain I've ever seen on television. Yeah. Words all generally mean what he says they mean, and he uses phone freaking somewhat close to correctly. Like, they're definitely made an effort to have someone look it over and say, yeah, okay, no, this is, there's nothing egregious here. But the whole attitude of like, so you never got a date, and all of this stuff, I'm like, you're just missing the point here. And I get that they wanted to have a little cybercrime in the episode, and maybe it landed when it first aired, but it's not landing for me now. And that makes the whole thing seem ridiculous, which makes Raylan's pursuit of the guy just feel kind of meaningless for me.
Yeah, and I'm also not in love with our villain's villain with Cousin Johnny. Like, I've never felt particularly threatened by him or that he
Well, good news. He's gone.
Yeah, well, and I derive no satisfaction from that moment, you know? Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, a lot of stuff I'm not a big fan of.
Johnny
right
seems like a shallower character now than he did when we first met him. That's the problem.
And he got less interesting the more standing up he did. When he was somebody with a colostomy bag and a veteran story, he was really interesting. And then he, you know, I don't know why they did that. I wish they leaned in on how physically infirm he was rather than move away. Like, well, he can walk sometimes if he feels like it.
Gambling Man says, so what you're saying is Timothy as the hacker in Live Free or Die Hard was a good role?
I don't know. I haven't seen it.
Relatively speaking, maybe.
Mm.
But they're both crap roles. That's what I'm saying. Like, it's yeah. It really wasn't the worst episode of Justified, even probably, to me. But
You know what? You want to place bets on how it scored on IMDb?
Okay. What's the ranking? Is 100% right for IMDb? I mean, my wife works for Rotten Tomatoes, so I'd prefer
they do an out of 10 scale.
10 stars.
Yeah.
See, I only know Tomatoes these days. So
8.6.
Yep. No, that's the show. The episode got an 8.4.
That's still not acceptable.
Wow. Okay. So
out of 467 reviews. So,
Well, statistically significant.
These are all people who had never seen Mr. Robot. That's all I'm going to say.
All right. Don't worry, Justified fans. We're not abandoning anything. We're gonna weather this storm.
This bad episode, it's not even a bad episode. This disappointing episode of Justified is still better than most episodes of television I've probably seen in my life.
Fair enough.
I've seen a lot of episodes of television.
Well, that opinion is yours to have.
Thank you. I feel like I made a good case for that opinion.
Yeah.
Didn't I? Do you think?
It was justified. It was justified. Right, it was justified.
Thanks, everybody, for watching. We'll see you next time.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.